Chapter 15 of Habits That Handicap. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information, or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Recording by John Thomas Kuz Kuzmarski. Habits That Handicap by Charles B. Townes. Chapter 15, Appendix, The Relation of Alcohol to Disease, by Alexander Lambert, M.D., Visiting Physician to Bellevue Hospital, Professor of Clinical Medicine, Cornell University, Author of Hope for the Victims of Narcotics. In the simple heading of the subject matter of this article, there are contained such possibilities of facts and fancies, truths and errors, and wide differences of opinion that it seems wise to define not only its meaning, but some of the words themselves. What is disease? To many people, it is a definite, concrete thing which seizes one in its clutches, holds one captive, or possesses one for a second time, and then, if overcome, releases its grip, and one is freed and in good health again. But disease is not an entity, even though some agents, as bacteria, are living organisms. It is the lack of some processes which these agents overcome, and others which they set in motion, as manifested by disturbances of various functions of different organs in the body that make up some of our diseases. Our bodies are often in a state of delicate equilibrium, and if some one gland fails to secrete, or secretes too abundantly, the resulting condition may become a disease. As health is a harmonious relationship between the various functions of different parts of the body, so disease is a disturbance of this harmony. The question of the relation of alcohol to disease becomes a question as to whether or not this narcotic, if taken into the body, can react on the various tissues and organs of the body to such a degree as to disturb the equilibrium of health. And furthermore, can this disturbance of healthy equilibrium be permanent, and the body acquire a lasting diseased condition? How it affects different men. Alcohol is classified here as a narcotic and not a stimulant, because we shall see later that alcohol is rather a paralyzer of functions, even when it seems to stimulate, than a producer of increased output from any organ. The time-honored idea that alcohol is a stimulant, and that, if used in moderation, it is a tonic, is so ingrained in the average mind that it is with the greatest difficulty that men can be made to realize that even in what seems moderate, does it may injure them. This is especially true as one sees men who all their lives have indulged moderately in alcoholic beverages, from which seemingly no harm has resulted. The truth, perhaps, is best summed up by the old adage that what is one man's meat is another man's poison, and there is no question that the effects of alcohol in small or moderate doses is vastly different from its effects in large doses or in long continued excessive use. Different human beings react differently to similar amounts of alcohol, and conversely, identical amounts of alcohol will affect different individuals in different ways, even when it poisons all of them. For instance, if alcohol sets different processes in motion which bring about damage to the individual, we find that in some persons it has injured the heart and arteries, in others it has affected the liver or stomach, leaving the brain and nervous tissues free from damage, while in still others the body in general seems to be untouched, and the brain and nervous tissues suffer the injuries. It is not uncommon to see a man who has partaken freely of alcoholic beverages all his life, with neither he nor his friends conscious that his intellect has suffered or deteriorated thereby, to find suddenly that his circulatory and digestive systems are seriously and permanently damaged. On the other hand, many a drunkard has become a burden to his family and the community, with his personality deteriorated, his intellect rendered useless, while his circulation and digestion remain unimpaired, and he lives long years a nuisance and a burden to his environment. Since I have made the distinction between moderation and excess in the use of alcohol, it will be well to define what is regarded as excess and what moderation, in order that the effects of both may be considered. Physiologic excess, it seems to me, has been best defined by a brilliant Frenchman named Duclos, who says that any one has drunken alcohol to excess when 1 hour after he has taken it is conscious in any way of having done so. If after a drink of any alcoholic beverage has been taken, wine, whiskey, or whatever it may be, an hour later we feel ourselves flushed, tongue loosened, or if we are heavy and drowsy, or if we find our natural reserve slightly in abeyance, if the judgment is not as sternly accurate as before partaking of the beverage, if the imagination is unusually active, and close consecutive reasoning not as easy as before, if we think we do our work much better, but next morning realize we haven't accomplished quite as much or done it as well as we expected, then we have shown a physiologic excess intake of alcohol, and an amount which, if continued, will produce damage somewhere in the body. Moderation in the use of alcohol means that it be taken in amounts of which one remains unconscious. This may seem a narrow and hard line to draw, and may seem to confine the amount of alcohol that may be consumed to much less than many people wish to indulge in. How much in actual amount this should be with any given individual depends upon that individual alone, and no one can be a law to any other individual than himself. If a man be engaged in severe manual labor or muscular exercise, he can consume more alcohol without detriment than when leading a sedentary life, although the character of the work that he will do may not be as good as if no alcohol were taken. The moderate use of alcohol. The above definition, however, must suffice. We must fix some standard between moderation and excess, and the more accurately we define moderation, the more narrowly do we confine it. Judge by the above standard, alcohol taken in moderate doses does not seem more than to stimulate the digestive processes of the stomach increase the flow of blood through the heart, increase the circulation in the periphery and skin, dilate the capillaries, and make it easier for the circulation to complete its cycles. When absorbed into the body in such doses, it can act as a food, and, in fact, as much as is burnt up by the body does act as a food, although it differs from other foods in that it is never stored up. It can replace in energy-giving properties sugars or fats, and being burnt up by the body can give out the equivalent of sugar and fat in muscular energy, and heat generated and given out by the body. Its effect is similar to that obtained by sugar and fats, which are taken up by the body when needed, and in the amounts requisite to the body at the moment, and it seems to be treated as far as can be seen as other foods for fuel. But it is not an economical fuel because the human organism does not perform its work as well as when there is no alcohol in the ration. Simultaneously, when being consumed as food, it is exerting its drug action. In this process, it is the more easily available, and thus the sugar and fats are stored up while the alcohol is burnt up. It spares the fat consumption, often causing an increase of bodily weight through the putting on of fat. To those who are accustomed to its use, it seems also to spare the protein consumption of the body, but to those unaccustomed to its use, it has the opposite effect, increasing the destructive breaking down of proteins. Danger signals unheeded. Moderate indulgence in alcoholic beverages adds to the pleasures of existence with a great many men, and while it seems to increase their pleasures and broaden the extent of their mental experiences, it cannot be said to increase their powers of accurate mental activity, though it temporarily increases the imaginative flow of ideas. It relieves the feeling of both body and mental fatigue for the time being, an effect which may be an advantage, or may be a distinct disadvantage, for fatigue is nature's warning when to stop, and if we dull ourselves to this feeling and leave the warning unheeded, we may easily go on to harmful excesses of overwork and overexertion. It is doubtful if the moderate drinking of alcohol, as we have defined moderation, sets in motion processes which may so disturb the equilibrium of the body as to cause disease. Broadly speaking, the excessive use of alcohol injures the body in two ways. It injures the functional cells of the different organs, for alcohol is distinctly a cellular poison, and it further disturbs the nutrition of the organs by its injurious action on the blood vessels, which supply nutrition to the various parts of the body. Whether to replace the destroyed cells, or as a result of the congestion, there is also an increase in the connective tissue framework of the various organs. The action of alcohol on the circulation is one of the earliest effects which is shown after it is taken into the body. The flushing of the skin is a beginning paralysis of the minute capillary blood vessels. If habitually indulged in, the effect is a continuous dilation of the vessels, although it seems for a while in the early stages that there is a toning up of the circulation. Yet excessive indulgence brings with it always a lowering of the blood pressure, and finally the chronic congestions in the internal viscera. The action of the heart at first is to make it beat fuller and stronger. But, if continued, the effect is also one of paralysis of its muscle and a diminution of the output of work done. And finally, it is a paralyzer of the heart's action. In some persons, through its injury to the cardiac blood vessels and intrinsic muscle of the heart, it sets in motion these morbid processes which result in angina pectoris. Beginning with the stomach, we find that when alcohol is taken in excess, it not only disturbs the processes of digestion that are then going on, if it is taken in greater amount than 5% of the stomach content, but it also acts directly on the mucous membrane, producing an irritant action. We have formed here a chronic congestion of the mucous membrane, which produces swollen cells, and the digestive glands of the stomach produce an excess of mucus which interferes with digestion, and the resulting congestion interferes with the gastric secretions. It ends in producing a swollen, inflamed mucous membrane, often with hemorrhages. These processes may go on to an atrophic form of gastritis, in which the mucous membrane may be so atrophied that it is unable to secrete sufficient gastric juice. The acid of the gastric juice, combining with certain substances in the intestine, is one of the stimulants which causes the production of the pancreatic secretion. The pancreas not only digests meats and other proteids, but it changes starch into sugar, and also has a fat-splitting ferment. Thus, we see the pancreatic digestion is a most important function, and does much more in the digestive work than the stomach. When, therefore, the acids of the gastric juice are lacking, there is an insufficient stimulus to the pancreas to pour out its complex juices and complete digestion. The attack upon the liver. Alcohol is so rapidly absorbed from the stomach and the upper intestine that it does not, as a rule, produce much change in the small intestines. The absorption of the digested food from the intestinal tract by alcoholics when recovering from a debauch is greater than normal, provided they have ceased from alcohol. The absorbing powers of the intestine remain a long time, and is the reason that so many alcoholics appear so well nourished. The acids of the gastric juice also stimulate the excretion of bile from the liver, and combining with the same ferment, the secretion being taken up by the blood stimulates the liver to an increased secretion of bile. If, therefore, one has so injured the stomach with the taking of alcohol that the mucous membrane is unable to secrete a proper gastric juice, it is readily seen that the proper stimulation to the liver and the pancreas are lacking, and the equilibrium of the entire digestive process of the body is upset. The blood from all the intestines goes directly to the liver, the circulation of this organ being so arranged that the blood must filter through and bathe the liver cells before it is gathered into a central vein and returns into the general circulation. In fact, the liver is the great chemical laboratory of the body, and the complex processes that go on there are as yet but little understood. The processes which I have described as generally characteristic of alcohol are seen to a very marked extent in the liver. There is a chronic congestion, and there is very frequently various forms of degeneration in the hepatic cells, and in many cases an increase in the connective tissue to such an extent as to cause the disease known as cirrhosis of the liver. Alcohol may also, under certain circumstances, produce such excessive fatty degeneration in the liver as in itself to be a menace to existence, for if the liver ceases to do its proper work, the whole minute nutritive chemistry, the metabolism of the body, breaks to pieces. The liver stands an enormous amount of use and abuse, and it is one of the last organs to give way under great strain. But when its functional processes do break down, the existence of the individual is not much further prolonged. The liver can consume and break down a certain amount of alcohol, but when more is poured into it than it can assimilate, some of it must go through into the general circulation and over the body, flowing to the brain and poisoning this organ and the other nervous tissues. The action of alcohol on the nervous tissues constitutes, in the eyes of the majority, the main injury that alcohol does to a human being. Certain it is that the action of alcohol on the brain does more to distort and pervert a man's relationship with his environment than any other action which alcohol has on the body. It is through the poison of this organ that the personality of the individual is so changed and so poisoned that a degeneration of the individual in character and morals is brought about. It is here, too, that the widest differences of tolerance and intolerance to alcohol are shown. Some men may consume enormous quantities and their mental balance apparently remain intact. Other individuals cannot take a single glass of wine without being distinctly affected by it, or rendered unmistakably drunken. The gross injuries found in the brain of those dying from the effects of alcohol are partly due to the effect of alcohol on the circulation and the injury to the blood vessels, thus diminishing the nutrition of the brain and injuring the brain tissue itself. And besides, as we have seen in other viscera, to the increase in connective tissue. It is not necessary here to go into the details of the minute formation of the cells, how each cell is formed of a cell body and many branches as one may conceive, growing like a tree or bush with the many branches stretching out and touching other branches of related and adjacent cells. When these dendrites or branches are in contact, there is an interrelationship between the processes of the two cells. Alcohol causes a retraction of the tiny branches, one from another, and the cells are dissociated so that the mental processes become dissociated from each other, and the cells themselves degenerate and are unable to carry on their functions. Thus, we see the functions of memory and of the reproduction of images by memory prevented, the inability of the mind to reason, through the inability of the mind to call up former experiences, feelings, and ideas, and a weakening of the power of each cell to take in impressions. Every person who drinks alcohol to excess will not show every form of mental deterioration that may be produced by excessive indulgence, and the degree of deterioration in intelligence which goes to make up the sum total of mentality varies greatly in different individuals. All who drink alcohol to excess, however, show some diminution in their judgment. Judgment means the power of recalling various memories of perceptions through the senses, which have come in from the outside world, memories of ideas, memories of emotions, and all the complicated association of ideas that these bring up, and in the recalling of them, weigh each one with the other, and judge of the value between them. This also means reasoning and decision for action. This power of reasoning and judging is weakened in the alcoholic, and in any brain long poisoned by alcohol, it is an impossibility to exercise it. Memory itself is also weakened. There is excessive forgetfulness of the recent past, and in some cases of advanced alcoholism, there is absolute forgetfulness of wide gaps of years. A man may be unable to remember anything from the last 5 minutes back for 20 years, and then remember back to childhood. The memories of childhood are more easily stamped on the brain than are those of adult life, both because it takes less to impress a child, and because there is not the complexity of ideas crowding into the brain, nor the complexity of association of ideas to be recorded. Therefore, memories of childhood make a deeper impress and last longer, and so the complex memories of the adult are the first to be forgotten in the alcoholic, and those of childhood remain. Effect upon memory and judgment. Besides the absolute forgetfulness, there is another form of forgetfulness in the alcoholic, which often produces a ludicrous result. This is a perversion of memory. The person may be in a perfectly strange place and meet strangers, and yet be convinced that he has seen the place and met the strangers before, and greet them as old friends. This feeling of having been there before occurs in normally healthy people, and may be simply the expression of momentary fatigue, or proceed from some unknown cause. But it is grossly exaggerated in the alcoholic, and cannot as easily be straightened out as in the normal mind. The imaginative faculties of the mind are at first heightened by alcohol, and this often produces bright, witty remarks in those who have taken enough alcohol to have their imaginations stimulated and their judgment slightly inhibited, so that their ideas crowd readily to their minds and their tongues are loosened. Often, however, they say things which, though bright and witty, had better be left unsaid, and this is an indication of the beginning paralysis of their judgment. The imaginative faculties, however, are not constructively increased by alcohol, and it does not conduce